So why don't we dive right in by interpreting one of the easiest events in the last 20 years of American history. Now, can someone tell me why in 1975 we pulled our troops out of Vietnam?
The failure of Vietnamization to win popular support caused an ongoing erosion of confidence in the various American but illegal Saigon regimes.
Is she right? Because I know that's the popular version of what went on there. I know a lot of people like to believe that. I wish I could, but I was there. I wasn't here in a classroom, hoping I was right, thinking about it. I was up to my knees in rice paddies with guns and Edward going up against Charlie, slugging it out with him, while pussies like you were back there partying, putting headbands on, doing drugs, listening to the goddamn Beatle albums. Oh!
Everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Stuff We've Seen. I am Jim, and now, the man hired to redact the Mueller report, Teal.
I have got my marker ready.
I got
like a case of Sharpies.
I'm not sure how you get the job to be the only person outside the Justice Department to see the entire Mueller report.
Well, somebody's got to do it, right? And
you're good with secrets.
And I'm good with secrets. They know I don't talk to anybody besides you.
Yep. And you're nonpartisan.
Yes, I am extremely nonpartisan.
Fairness.
Yes, I will be doing an objective and fair redaction.
That's really good. All right, now that we've got that out of the way, kids, we are here live before the studio audience to discuss movies, I think.
You seen anything?
Well, you know, I've been catching up on some TV series. We won't bore you with that. But there is one film that I watched over the weekend that caught my attention on Amazon Prime.
Ooh.
Yeah. And, you know, Amazon Prime, they're not always adding a lot of good new movies, but they will frequently sort of replenish their coffers with lots of old goodies. And they put up this film called The Apple.
Mm.
And it's from 1980.
Oh, 1980. Okay.
Yeah, it's from 1980. And I was reading the description of, like, what is this movie, The Apple? And it was directed by Menachem Golan from Canon Films.
Okay, just hold on a second. You were looking at a list of what's upcoming on Amazon and somehow this caught your eye?
Well, no, you know, like on Amazon Prime, which you have, right? You go through and it shows, you know, I don't know if it says recommended movies, but it just says like new on Amazon Prime.
Oh, okay. So it's just, yeah.
And then I see the little Prime logo on the corner and I say, I can watch this for free.
But what about this one caught your eye?
You know, there was some weird sort of looking disco-y images from like 1980 on the image. And then immediately it said something about, you know, when I heard like Menachem Golan in 1980 and, you know, an Adam and Eve like singing couple enter a competition and get sucked into a seedy underworld of drugs and misbehavior or something. I said, I've got to take a look at this.
Okay, that sounds pretty good. I think I might be sold on seeing this now.
Well, and you know, something was stinging in the back of my brain as if, like, why do I know this movie? And I realized pretty quickly, like within the first 20 seconds of watching this movie, that I had learned something about it from watching a documentary a couple years back on Canon Films.
Right.
That they had made some epic big budget for them, big budget disaster musical in the sort of vein of Thank God It's Friday or any of those other disco picks.
Right.
When disco had already started to pass, but it was too late because they'd already rolled production on this.
Is Xanadu in that category? I've never seen that.
Xanadu is one of my wife's favorite movies, and she has a lot of friends that are big, big fans of Xanadu. I think that you and I being, you know, guys and growing up when we did, we probably missed the Xanadu boat.
Yeah, I definitely missed the Xanadu boat because I've never seen it.
But it is definitely in that sort of vein of way over the top, a little bit ridiculous, just phantasmagoric, crazy images and dance numbers.
Over there, a great rock and roll band. This is the 80s. Real smooth dancers, wild trombone, the band decked out in tuxedos. Six guys wearing electric orange, synthesizer, heavy percussion, electric guitar.
That get you moving. And so I was intrigued. I was like, let me just watch a few minutes. And, you know, it was like Friday night. My wife and I said, well, let's watch. And within like the first literally 2 minutes of the movie, my jaw had dropped and I was like, this is way, way better than I could have ever imagined. It is so ridiculously cheesy. And you had the sense, I mean, I'm not kidding. When if you just even watch 15 minutes of this film, you will realize pretty quickly that everybody on board of making this movie must have been like coked out of their minds. It has this energy of people that are doing real up drugs.
Wow.
And it is just, I mean, it is in many ways, it's ahead of its time. And not only because it's 1980 when the film came out, it
right.
was set in 1994, this sort of far off futuristic land. And they reimagined what it would be like 14 years in the future. And it's this weird sort of disco dystopian society with people with the most ridiculous shoulder padded outfits and, you know, hairstyles and colors that became MTV just a few years later.
Right.
So it was almost like predicting what MTV was going to look like.
Right. They were predicting 4 years in the future, not 14. Oh.
And it's got, I mean, there's this crazy sort of music conglomerate that sort of runs the whole world, and it's Boogaloo International Music, and they have these stickers called like the BIM stickers, and everybody has to wear them. And if you're walking down, like, you know, in a park and you don't have your BIM sticker on, you could get a ticket. And there's this amazing...
Wait, it's actually called Boogaloo?
Yeah, there's this guy who runs everything. He's like
so
something
wait, is this,
Boogaloo.
Is this related to Breakin' 2 in some way?
No. It's actually, I think it's pronounced Boogaloo or something, but
okay.
They say Boogaloo. That's like, it's a W at the end instead of the normal Boogaloo. But Boogaloo must have been, maybe it was a cocaine term or something.
Right, because Breakin' 2 is also a canon film.
Yes. So they really were into this Boogaloo. And there's a scene in the middle of the movie that everybody's going about their business. There's like a hospital is like operating on a patient. And this announcement comes over the loudspeakers everywhere that everybody must stop what they're doing for the hour of mandatory Boogaloo exercises. And they break out into a whole song and dance number.
Citizens.
It is now 1 minute to 4 o'clock. Time to stop ordinary activities and prepare for the national BIM hour.
All traffic must pull over and stop immediately. BIM exercises commence in 40 seconds. Join in the national fitness program.
Citizens, attention. Counting down to BIM hour. Exercises designed for your health and peace of mind. All citizens must participate.
Attention, citizens. Shut down the machines. Put away your work. Get up and get ready for BIM hour.
10 seconds to BIM hour.
The National Fitness Program is watching you.
5, 4, 3, 2,
BIM.
Bizarre.
You know what it did remind me of? And it was a movie that you really liked way, way back when.
Yeah.
Shock Treatment.
Oh, it's similar to, okay, that's
interesting. It's similar, that's what, and even my wife said, yes, it seems very much like Shock Treatment. Kind of like they wanted the whole Rocky Horror Picture vibe.
Right.
So they made a sort of sequel that just didn't work.
Exactly.
Because it was bigger and more elaborate, and it was also self-aware that it was being a spoof. This film, though, I guess its genesis came from Israel, and there were a couple of songwriters that wrote this sort of epic musical with like 17 different songs, and it was a parable about Adam and Eve, but in like the modern age.
Okay.
And
wow,
they took it really seriously, and then it got sold to Canon, and
right.
they made this film that they basically started rewriting everything, and had them rewrite most of the songs. I can't even describe these songs to you, but they're just insane.
So,
and they.
So what, are you recommending this movie?
Well, not for everybody, but if you like just like, you know, sit back and relax and have your mind blown with just total insanity.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I look like if somebody out there enjoys themselves the reefer.
Right.
I think that they might be able to have themselves a pretty good time if they sat back, relaxed, and watched this thing. Or some cocktails or whatever other right. refreshments that you wish. I watched it very sober and straight, but I still had a good time. And at the end, my wife said, you know, did you give it a rating on IMDb? And I said, yes, I gave it a 9 because I had to counter off all the really bad ones. And she goes, you only gave it a 9? That's a 10 movie all the way. She gives it a 10.
So this is interesting. These are like movies that kind of suck, but we love anyway.
Kind of suck. Oh, this is terrible. Like,
right.
And
oh, that's
what I
mean.
There's a Riff Tracks out there, but unfortunately, it's not on Amazon because I would watch it again in a second to watch it with the Riff Tracks commentary.
Well, and that may happen if it's recently rediscovered. This film, I had never heard of it.
I wish. I can't believe this wasn't like a midnight fixture for ages.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's interesting. Midnight movies. But
I just cherish this movie because I love it when there's like, I thought I've seen everything and I knew everything.
Right.
But then I find out that this movie's existed since 1980 and it has 80s schlock goddess, Catherine Mary Stewart as the lead.
Ooh.
It was her first, she was undiscovered. She went to an audition and I think somebody had a crush on her in the casting and they're like, you're hired.
Wow.
And they basically told like, oh, she can really sing, but she couldn't sing. And she took all these lessons. And then at the end, they decided that they had better hire a professional to dub her voiceover for the songs. But
wow.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but like, it's so great. It's to me,
okay.
The ultimate comfort food in film.
Right. So that's the thing. It's like sometimes you want to watch Persona.
Yes.
And sometimes
you want to watch The Apple.
And sometimes you want like just a big bag of Cool Ranch Doritos.
That's it. It's just like that. I'm sitting back and I'm chawing on some Doritos and I don't want to be thinking too hard.
And you're not going to argue that Doritos are gourmet food at any point.
You know it's junk food.
You know it's junk food, but you kind of love it. And the other thing is you're not really going to begrudge anyone else their bag of Doritos, right?
Well, I might, but
if they
like the spicy Doritos or something.
Right. No, I'm fine with somebody else liking the spicy Doritos as long as they don't claim their gourmet food.
Yeah, right. I don't.
Right?
People there would be like, this is a masterpiece. Like, I'm being sort of funny, but the apple is a masterpiece of crap.
Right. Exactly. Yes, exactly.
But it's not to be critically analyzed as anything other than a total failed attempt that is so worth being discovered by young audiences and old. And
so,
yeah, well, it's like you said this on an episode recently where you admit that you saw The Rock's Skyscraper, right?
Yes.
And yet you have still not seen Singing in the Rain. See, that's a perfect example. Why is Singing in the Rain a chore? But you need sometimes to just sit back with your bag of Doritos and watch Skyscraper, even though you know it is a terrible movie.
Skyscraper is a terrible... Yes, and you know it's terrible all the way through. But you kind of just get into it just for the fact that it's like artificial cheese powder.
Now, when you watch films like that, Do you watch them like with your family or by yourself? Or...
I generally watch them by myself.
Well, is it that, you know, you need something to sort of occupy the space madness, but because you don't want to think, but you want to have something to watch. And certainly those kind of films, you don't need to do a lot of thinking.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly it. I don't want to do any thinking. I don't want to have to consider the world in a new way. I don't want it to have any emotional impact on me. I just want, I guess, comfort. I want some junk food. I want, you know, just to like sit there and not really think and not really consider and just kind of be entertained. And sometimes these movies get a little boring, right? Because you just know exactly what's going to happen all the way through. Every beat is totally expected.
Well, when Skyscraper, you know, did come on cable recently, we watched it with the family.
Yeah.
And it was, as you said, it was even for a rock movie, I think it was bad.
Yeah.
And I started to tune out in the second half because I was like, there's no surprises here.
There's no surprises. And you do kind of tune out. I guess that's sort of the point, right? It's that you're tuned out, that you're not doing a lot of thinking. And for me, like a movie like Skyscraper, yeah, I tuned it out. But I like Dwayne Johnson.
You know, just the other day, the other day was like literally, what, Sunday or something. I feel like he's got so many movies now. There's always one on.
And they're all the same.
They had him in Journey to the Center of the Earth Part 2.
Yes.
And then, it's, you know, that's an awful movie too. But
terrible.
It came on and I like shouted out to my youngest. I said, hey, come here. There's this movie. It's got monsters in it and it's got The Rock. And as soon as he hears The Rock, Rock appeals to kids.
Yes, The Rock.
And he sat and watched the whole thing.
Well, I find The Rock really appealing and charismatic and funny. And he in and of himself is like my bag of Doritos.
Well, he is that classic mold of movie star in that he transcends acting. It's not that he's actually a pretty good actor for what he is.
Yeah.
He doesn't get out of his comfort zone. He's in one zone.
Well, he has sort of, I'd say he has two zones. He has a comedy zone and an action zone. And there's not a lot of difference. There's not a lot of space between them. But he's a little bit more serious in the action zone.
Yeah, except see, then what's happening is they're crossing it over because like I would think that the action zone when he's in the Fast and Furious movies, he is a little tongue in cheek, but he's kind of the more serious version of the
Exactly.
Rock.
Yeah.
But then they said, that's not going to do. We need to have the humor. So let's get him and Statham, who's also in those movies, let's get them together in their own film. And we get Calvin and Hobbes. Is that it? Or what is that one that's coming out? Hobbs and Shaw. That's it.
Hobbs
Have you seen
Shaw.
The trailer for Hobbs and Shaw?
No, I don't even know what it is.
It is a mess. You stop it. Right, stop right there. You do not know what Hobbs and Shaw is. I swear. You put your hand up and you're telling me the truth.
I'm putting my hand up. Never heard of this.
I think you're lying. I think you do know exactly what it is. You just want to hear me explain it to you.
No, I have no idea. I've never. Okay. I don't know what this is.
Okay.
Is this like Holmes and Watson?
No, well, let's hope it doesn't turn out to be that
bad. Is this like Stan and Ollie?
I didn't see that. so anyways, have you seen the Fast and the Furious movies?
Yes.
Okay. You've seen how many of you? Have you seen most of them or all of them?
I've seen all of them.
Okay. So you know that The Rock is in the movie, right?
Yes.
The last second half of those movies.
Yes.
Okay. And he is he's some kind of law enforcement. And
he's a U.S. Marshal or something. Yeah.
And I know it's hard to actually know who any of those characters' names are, but his last name is Hobbs.
Okay.
Okay. Then you've got Jason Statham. Starts off as a really bad guy, sort of the nemesis, at least in one of the movies. And then eventually he teams up with them somehow, right? He's still a bad guy, but he's teamed up with them by the end of these movies. He is Shaw.
Oh,
so
they're making a movie with the two of them?
Well, basically they said, why do we have to have this series just be Fast and Furious? Why can't we branch out? So they branched out and they've got one. It's sort of Fast and the Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw. And now those two guys have to get paired together to like cause mayhem, destruction. And it's like a hoot. They're like, there's like jokes aplenty. It looks amazing.
Okay, well,
the kids are in. I'm in. We're in.
Okay,
to see this movie.
I'm in, except for one thing. I'm just not a big Statham fan.
Well, I mean, he's in, what? But that's like Doritos right there.
I get it. It's just like The Rock charms me somehow. There's something very charismatic about him. And I get that with Statham to some extent, but he doesn't seem like he's in on the joke quite as often. I feel like the joke's on him.
Okay, so next thing you're going to tell me is you didn't like the Meg.
It's Megalodon.
Well,
he's kidding, right?
Now, you can't tell me that Statham wasn't in on the joke there. That movie is what the Doritos were, I think, invented years and years ago so that they would be ready for the day that the Meg came out.
Okay, so the Meg.
It's Megalodon. He's kidding, right?
Now, okay, the Meg is definitely a Doritos movie.
Yes, it is.
And so the question with a Doritos movie is like, how much can you take before you start feeling a little bit sick?
Listen, I actually saw the Meg in IMAX in the theater with my two sons, and we loved it.
I think I would have liked it better if I saw it in those circumstances. I think it's a movie that is better with an audience, probably.
My youngest liked it so much that he asked for it for Christmas, and he wanted the 4K. And then just recently, him and my wife watched it on 4K, and my wife said, I got to tell you, one thing about that 4K, man, it felt like they were right in the room.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I can't say I'm going to watch this movie again to reevaluate my opinion on it. But sometimes with these movies, okay, I mean, I'm not defending Skyscraper at all, all of these movies do really dumb stuff. Dumb stuff happens in them. The characters make dumb decisions. It's unrealistic. It's silly. And either you're in on the joke or you're not, right, as an audience member. Either you think this is fun or you don't. And
well, yeah, because the plot holes are aplenty in these movies.
Yeah, and so if you think about it at all, it's going to totally fall apart. And so there's one part in the Meg.
Okay. Yeah, tell me what, because I mean, I actually thought, this is, again, I'm going to just be full disclosure.
Yeah.
I thought for the type of film it was, and I'm not saying that it was plausible that this Meg could have been living down. I'm just saying that I actually thought that they kind of, you know, they built in some good pseudoscience into the film.
Oh, I'll buy their pseudoscience. The one part I was going to point out is, so Jason Statham sort of has this budding romance with this shark scientist woman.
It's Megalodon. He's kidding, right?
Yes, he does. Yes.
And
I think I know what you're getting at.
Yeah.
I think I probably was like, what?
At one point, she's going to go down in a shark cage and shoot the shark with
Of course, forget that the fact that she has a little daughter and that she's probably going to get killed by the Megalodon. And
right.
Why would she do that? I don't know.
So Jason Statham is trying to stop her from going. And he's, I should do it instead. I'm the man. Women can't do this, right? And then and she says, but I have the expert knowledge of shark anatomy. I'm the only person who understands sharks well enough to do this. And he says, oh, well, okay then. So she gets in the shark cage and she goes underwater and she says, I'm going to shoot it in the eye. That was her detailed knowledge of shark anatomy.
But maybe she knew exactly where in the eye to do it, and she couldn't look, the fact is it's all a buildup for the finale where the Megalodon is attacking a whole beach, sort of a floating beach of people.
Yeah.
And at that point, this is where my little kids are getting jazzed, and the little one especially is going, go get him, Meg! Like, he was so excited. He's like, oh, I wish the Meg had chopped up and ate more people. Like, he
loved
it.
Has he seen
the Sharknado movies? Oh, no. Oh, sorry.
I was going to say Jurassic Park 3.
I didn't. No. He's seen the most recent two.
Okay.
That's my anti-Doritos movie, because I felt like the last one of those was just the worst.
I didn't see that. I saw the one before it.
That was ridiculous, but there was some enjoyable moments.
Yeah. The reason I bring up Jurassic Park 3, this it's not a good movie, but I kind of like it for one reason.
Okay.
Alexander Payne and Jim Taylor did a rewrite on Jurassic Park 3.
They did?
Yes.
Well, what did they bring to the table?
What they brought to the table is every human character in the movie is a despicable idiot. I'm serious. They made them into like sort of Alexander Payne and Jim Taylor. The, for our listeners, they did Sideways and Election and I'm blanking
about
on
about Schmidt.
About Schmidt.
Nebraska.
And they tend to do these characters that are kind of not the greatest people in the world.
Not good humans.
No. Not good humans. And that's what they brought to Jurassic Park 3. And so as a result, you root for the dinosaurs through the whole movie.
they're sort of like the Jason or Mike Myers of the film.
Yes,
you can't
yes.
wait for them to gobble up those teens.
Exactly, and so I think your youngest should check out Jurassic Park 3.
All right, someday
it really is a root for the monsters kind of movie.
All right. Well, you see, clearly, right, our tastes of Doritos are a little different.
They're a little different. But like I said before, I can't begrudge somebody else as long as they admit it's Doritos.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if someone says, I like the Meg better than Jaws, I'm going to find them and I'm going to slap them.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe, you know, so we got to put that in perspective. There's only one really good critical shark movie, even though that is ridiculous, which is, you know, Jaws.
Which is Jaws. Yeah.
So what other type, like, is there other types of Doritos? It seems like everything you're talking about is action. Is that really your Doritos land in action movies?
My Doritos tends to land in action movies. Because comedies, I have a comedy on my list.
Okay.
On my Doritos list.
Oh, you have a whole list you brought to the table.
I've got a couple of films.
All right. Well, I want to hear about those films.
Okay, so you've mentioned seeing the Meg more than once.
Well, I haven't. My kid has.
Your kid has.
We own it now, so I can see the Meg whenever I want to.
Okay, so sometimes with Doritos movies, this happens to me every now and then, I watch it and I'm like, that's a great Doritos movie. I loved it. And this happened to me with a movie called Reign of Fire.
Oh, yes. A lot of people hate that movie, but I saw that in the theater. I kind of liked it.
I thought it was a great kind of action Doritos type movie. I watched it again about 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And it was awful.
Oh. So you're saying in one time you found comfort and then another time you're like, what the hell was I thinking?
Exactly. Yeah. It was kind of boring. The script was a little all over the place. It wasn't as much silly fun as it was the first time around.
Well, as long as you got enjoyment out of it one time.
I did. Fine. Yeah. Yeah. But I guess my point is that there's some movies that I keep coming back to as comfort or as a Doritos movie.
What's a movie you'll watch? Like say you're flipping channels and it comes on and you find yourself sucked into watching it from the point that you showed up on. And
well, this movie is almost too good to be a Doritos movie, but this is one I get sucked into every single time. Edge of Tomorrow.
So I don't think Doritos movies, I don't think there's a criteria that says if it's actually good, it's right. not a Doritos movie. I think that's actually a perfect Doritos movie because it's the film that it bombed pretty much. Right. I mean, I don't know if it's a bomb, but it did not do well when it first came out. And it's definitely found itself a following and it is very rewatchable.
It is extremely rewatchable. Yeah.
And they're making a sequel to it, by the way.
Oh, they are.
Yes, that's announced. And I know that you don't, you don't read up on these things. So I'm telling you now, they are making a sequel.
Okay. But yeah, that's a sort of perfect Doritos movie for me. Here's a comedy for you that's on my Doritos list. Pitch Perfect.
Yes, I would agree. I saw the first one when it came on cable, and I actually watched it several times because it was, it was Doritos-y. It was very just enjoyable.
Yeah.
And I guess Doritos is almost sometimes a little bit of shame in admitting that you liked it. And so,
absolutely, because you're not out there defending it as great cuisine, but you're saying I liked this, and so sometimes there's a little bit of shame.
Well, I think there's this kind of in a weird way remind me of another film. And I think sometimes it's one that like my wife will enjoy. It maybe enjoyed more than me, but it was one that I knew was Doritos the first time I ever saw it in the theater, way back when. And I think we even mentioned this like way early on in one of our episodes, is The Cutting Edge.
Oh, yes, yes, with D.B. Sweeney and Moira Kelly.
There's nothing of significant critical value in that movie, but and I don't know why it's so poorly put together and there's so many ridiculous cliches, but man, it is pure comfort.
Yeah, that's how I feel about Ice Castles.
Yeah, right. Well, right. Why would we even watch movies like that, right, that we know going in are going to just be bad if we didn't get some pleasure?
We've got, yeah, there and there is pleasure to be found in these.
That's I liked that from a couple episodes ago with the great Kate.
Yeah.
She said something about not guilty pleasures, but these are our pleasures. And right. I like that.
They don't have to be guilty. You can just unabashedly say, you know what? I enjoy this. I know it's not the greatest thing in the world, but it brings me joy. It brings me pleasure.
Well, there was a couple of films that came out in the 80s, and they're comedies. But they're kind of, I don't know, guilty pleasures or just Doritos in that I don't – they're critically, I don't even – I check that at the door when I watch them.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
One of them is – and I think a lot of people like this, and you don't see it on cable too often. It's harder to find, is She's One of the Guys.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. I remember that movie well. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it, you know, it features a lot of people that never really went on to big careers.
Right.
And it was one of these things where, you know, after Tootsie, it was popular of, you know, the person changing sexes to see what it's like to be on the other side of things. And you know, she's this great, you know, reporter from a local high school. And she wants to, like, do an investigation of, like, you know, what it's like to be a guy. And she has to go to a rival school. Don't ask me how you can just suddenly transfer in. But she does. And, you know, nuttiness ensues. And it's, you know, it's pretty fun.
Yeah, that's so when we're on the subject of 80s comedies here, I do have one that I've seen more times than really I want to admit to. But it was one that my sister and I both had as sort of Doritos comfort food 80s comedy, and that is Summer School.
That is the quintessential Doritos movie because it is great. I mean, Mark Harmon actually, you know, he made a slew of these little films. There's another one where, you know, I forget, like it involves like him making a bet with some other guys to like, you know, win over a girl or something. And it was, I think it was called Worth Winning.
Oh, yes, yes, that's right. Worth Winning. Yep.
Any of those movies he touched, they were really like that B-tier comedy, but yeah. they're just fun.
They're just fun. Yeah. And Summer School for some reason just really tickled me for a long time. So,
yeah, I showed that to my oldest maybe a year or so ago and he really enjoyed it.
Really? Okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's one of the things is that even though some movies, you know, are really dated when they're 30 years old. If it's a good comedy, it holds up.
That's true. Yeah, I think that's definitely true.
Huh. Now, I have another one. Again, we're delving into 80s comedies for a second. This one is Doritos, and I'll tell you why it's Doritos, because it's something that I don't think flies in today's world.
Okay.
And it didn't even fly back then. It was very problematic, but I loved it when I saw it, and I've watched it like at least a dozen times, and I don't know why it still wins me over, but it does, is this movie that was directed by Joan Micklyn Silver called Loverboy.
Loverboy.
And essentially the concept...
Who's the lead?
It's Patrick Dempsey.
Okay. I was blanking on that. Oh, I know this movie well. I've seen this several times.
It's sort of in that same vein as the movie Secret Admirer.
Right.
Lots of nutty hijinks as far as miscommunications, and
yeah.
He's a guy who's not doing well in college. His parents won't pay for him to go another year. And he has this girlfriend that he wants to get back to. So what does he do? He gets a summer job at pizza. And he suddenly, somehow, falls into the role of being a gigolo.
Yes.
And he becomes the most successful gigolo. And he makes all this money. And the idea is that he's sleeping with all of these different men's lonely wives, yes, right? Because he spends time, you know, like listening to them and
right,
and just helping them out. And next thing you know, the pizza place is becoming the greatest run on pizzas. The code is a certain type of pizza with like anchovies or something.
That's right.
And he makes all this money. And then, of course, it gets all discovered at the end. But instead of his girlfriend, like, horrified and wanting to break up with him, she, like, thinks it's great that he did all of this for her.
Yes.
You know, so this movie just – I remember even watching it back then going, boy, this just doesn't seem like an appropriate kind of thing.
It's not – and you've rewatched it.
I've seen this movie at least a dozen times over the years.
Okay, because, you know, again, like we talked about this on an early episode, but License to Drive didn't really hold up for me.
But it's still a Doritos movie.
Oh, it's absolutely still a Doritos movie. Oh, well, here's a movie I just saw last week, actually.
Okay.
Legally Blonde.
Oh, you said you wanted to watch that with your daughter. I don't know if that's a Doritos movie.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it is a little bit. It's pretty enjoyable. She's pretty fun.
Well, it's enjoyable, but I think there's a lot of value in what the film is saying as a comedy, so I don't know if it's necessarily cheesy.
Well, that's true. It is.
Hey, but there's no stopping. You can talk about any film you like on this program.
And this is something I was sort of thinking about, though. Is there a point at which, like, a cheesy movie transcends itself and becomes something more?
Well, had you ever seen that movie before?
What, Legally Blonde?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if this was like, you know, you're watching it with your daughter, but we're surprised that it's actually a pretty good movie.
No. I'd seen it before and knew it was a pretty good movie, but it's a little cheesy, you know. So, yeah, I think there is something to be said for sort of those comedies that were there in your teenage years. For us, that was the 80s. But most of my wheelhouse on these movies is action movies. I have one Doritos subgenre.
Okay. A Tostito.
I have an entire Doritos subgenre that I don't know what it is about these movies, but I'll watch one pretty much any time. They are survival movies.
Like Alive?
Like Man versus Nature types. Yes, like Alive.
Okay. Like The Revenant?
The Revenant is absolutely on that. Everest, that kind of movie. Yeah, absolutely The Revenant. Survival movies. There's one with Daniel Radcliffe that came out recently called Jungle. There's this one with Kate Winslet and Idris Elba.
Was that good? I think I had no desire to see it. I think my wife watched it and said it was a slog.
Well, it is a slog, but I don't care because it's a survival movie.
So this is where the Doritos comes in. It doesn't matter whether it's good or not. If it's just you're into this genre.
Exactly. And it
gives you comfort. Probably because you're like, I don't want to ever get stuck.
Exactly.
On top of Everest.
On top of Everest, having to like eat my hands and stuff. So,
yeah. So you're comforted by the fact that it isn't happening to you.
Exactly. But there's something, but it provides me with something that's like man versus nature kind of struggle. And I also really like the details of survival. Like The Revenant is really good at doing that. The little details of how you stay warm and eat and get maggots out of your feet and all that kind of thing. So that's an entire and yes, there's some really good movies in there, and there's some really cheesy movies too. But pretty much the whole subgenre is a Doritos fest for me.
Because it's giving it. That's where we were trying to break this down. We realize it's about films that give us comfort.
Exactly.
You know, I don't know if I have as many because, like, I think of things since a lot of the things that give us comfort movies I'll watch over and over again.
Right.
Might actually be like, so for instance, The Big Lebowski, right? We're not going to get into the whole thing about Big Lebowski.
That's a whole different kind of comfort, though.
But what it is, right? And I'm admitting it's not a Doritos movie, but it is the kind of film that not only will I pull out of whatever format I have it on and watch it, you know, oh, I haven't seen it in a year or so, I got to watch the whole thing.
Right.
But if it shows up on TV, I will get sucked in and watch a good half hour to an hour or just finish it. Why, I don't know. You know, I can't explain why some of those films, but you start to know it so well that you just feel like, yeah, there's nothing else better on. I can just watch this.
Yeah.
I think some of my comfort things kind of stem from my family. I feel like we had comfort movies that we would watch over and over again.
Yeah.
Like, we really were big fans of the Clint Eastwood, Clyde the Ape movies.
Oh, those were great.
Any Which Way You Can.
Yeah, Right Turn, Clyde.
You know, back before cable, before we had that, one of those would show up at the drive-ins as a second feature all the time.
Right.
Like, I think the drive-ins just could get their hands on that as the second feature. And anytime that that was paired up with something, my family went. I had to have seen Any Which Way You Can at the drive-ins at least five times, and I'm not joking. And we just loved it. It was those opportunities for the entire family to say all the lines from the movie.
Right. Right. And those are crowd-pleasing movies, too.
They certainly please the crowd in our car.
Yeah. Well, they're well laid out with punchlines and humor and action, and they're enjoyable.
I'm going to mention a movie that is not a comfort for me, but I feel that it's a comfort for many.
Uh-huh.
And I understand why. Some of it became a meme and a sort of a cultural joke, but I feel that I was on the ground floor of this. So that's why I'm mentioning it. So summer of 1987, mm-hmm. I worked at the movie theater, the multiplex, and I love coming of age stories,
mm-hmm.
as I think you do too.
Yeah, but that's really a subgenre that you're into.
Yes, it is. And so especially ones that, you know, if I'm in the 80s, anything that was like 60s or 50s, you know, those were the periods before I was born. So I guess I was just fascinated in coming of age stories from that period.
Yeah.
I loved American Graffiti, stuff like that. So there was a film coming out. I thought it was going to be like a B movie, you know, sort of like small, wasn't going to do much, but it was set in like the 60s. So I kind of wanted to see it.
Mm-hmm.
It was this film called Dirty Dancing, right? You've heard of it.
I've heard of it.
Right.
I have heard of it.
So the day it comes out, that afternoon before work, me and a couple of the people from the cinema that were going to be on that night, we went and watched it. And I was remembered how awful I thought it was. I mean, I just thought it was terrible because, like, the original songs sounded like they're from the 80s. And you
right.
know how me, I'm very into this minutia of details.
It really doesn't feel like a period movie.
It doesn't. I felt like the hairstyles. Like, I mean, I was like that. I'm like, none of this just makes any sense. And the whole plot that hinged on this one dancer who got pregnant and has to have a, you know, abortion.
Yeah.
Abortion gets botched. And it would have been so easy for when the girl's father comes in for to say, it's not Johnny's kid, it was somebody else. But they
right.
keep it secret just to keep the plot going. So
yeah.
I hated it, right? And I just thought it was terrible. And then so suddenly in the next couple of weeks, it becomes a fairly big hit.
A total phenomenon.
Theater. And I'm watching kids come in, people going, and I would walk through the, you know, the theater because you have to go and check all the theaters, make sure the temperature's right or whatever. I don't know why they made us do this, but you have to go through all the theaters and people were loving this movie.
Yeah.
It was a huge hit and I was very surprised. And it was one of those things where kids that worked the theater wanted to see it again. And there were like five or six of us. We would go sometimes at midnight.
Right.
Because we could always get passes. We'd be off and the theater was never, you know, super filled.
Right,
so you
right,
could
right.
get tickets. So we go. I was forced to see this movie a second time. And where you're in a midnight show,
mm-hmm.
you're feeling a bit punchy, sat back, and literally the movie was so hilarious. I was making fun. I was making baby in the corner jokes.
Long before.
I felt like I was the first person to make a baby in the corner joke because I was making it there that night. We were shouting out at the screen and it was a hoot. And when the girl's like, you don't know shit about my problems and all these things, we were loving it. And I walked out of that film with like a different appreciation. I thought it was terrible,
right?
But I found that for me, I got some merits out of it just because it's cheesy,
right? And you got some joy out of it.
And I won't watch this movie again, but I know that there are people that watch it all the time, like the films that we described. And I think for them, it's a comfort food. Why? I think they know it's terrible, but they enjoy it, and they enjoy the cheesy lines.
Yeah, they enjoy the cheesy melodrama and the music and the whole thing. And it kind of I get it.
It's like that other Patrick Swayze movie that so many people love. I was just going to bring that up. You know which one we're talking about.
We're talking about Roadhouse. And that's a movie that is, boy, people love that movie. I mean, it's amazing that Swayze pulled this off, but like, I feel that Roadhouse is sort of like the male Dirty Dancing.
I want you to be nice until it's time to not be nice.
Well, how are we supposed to know when that is?
You won't. I'll let you know. You are the bouncers, I am the cooler. All you have to do is watch my back and each other's. Take out the trash.
I would agree with you. It is. It's another movie that I saw with my dad, and I was like walked out going, that movie was horrible.
It's awful.
And then months later, this kid I used to know was talking about going, we go all the time to the Dollar Theater and see it. I've seen that movie 10 times. Yes. I'm like, you have? He's like, it's the greatest movie ever.
Yeah, I mean, people love it to the point where I've seen people argue that it's not Doritos.
Oh, it's Doritos.
Oh, it is pure Doritos. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pouring cheese on those Doritos.
But there is this sort of thing that happens with some of these nacho cheese. Sort of that movie theater cheese. Is that what you're talking about? That gooey nacho cheese.
Gooey nacho cheese.
Just squirt that right into your bag of Doritos.
I want my arteries clogged when I'm watching Roadhouse.
But there are some movies that... some of them become like cult movies, but others turn into that sort of Dirty Dancing thing. But it's somehow the movie is regarded as being better than it was initially. One movie I'm thinking about that fits this perfectly is They Live, which I saw in the theater when it came out.
I did too.
And I thought, this has some fun ideas. It's kind of enjoyable, but it's also really stupid. And I was a John Carpenter fan, but I was like, part of me was like, this movie is kind of stupid, even though I loved it at the time.
I loved it, but it wasn't one of those movies that I was like, I will cherish this. I'm going to buy it when it comes on DVD or all those things. I mean, I kind of, you know, I saw it and then I put it to bed.
Yeah.
But then, you know, it takes a life of its own.
And it's taken on a huge life of its own. Like, it is written about, like, people have written their doctoral dissertations on this movie.
I don't know what kind of doctorate they're getting.
No, I'm serious. I mean,
no, I know, but I'm just kind of questioning those decisions.
Well, have you seen A Pervert's Guide to Ideology?
Have I seen it?
Yeah, the movie.
No, what is that?
It's a documentary with Zizek, the philosopher, talking about movies.
I have not seen it. Where can I see it somewhere?
It was on Netflix a while ago.
Hmm.
And anyhow, he spends a lot of time on They Live in that movie. Well, you should check it out if you can, if it's still available.
Okay.
But yeah, They Live definitely has sort of transcended its Doritos-ness, or it's celebrated. And some of these movies like turn into cult films. But some of them...
So if it's a cult film now, like, or if it becomes a cult film, do we have to take it out of the Doritos category?
Not necessarily, because I feel like the Doritos category is an entirely personal category.
Well, see, that's where I feel like the Apple right now, I know there are some people that consider it a cult, but I don't think it's known enough. That's why right now it's in Doritos. It can get to cult later if everybody discovers how awesome it is.
Exactly, yeah.
Right now it's my own personal joy.
But it'll stay your own personal joy. I think Doritos is entirely subjective and personal, and one person's Doritos is another person's trash.
You know what is not a Doritos movie?
What?
Anything directed by Jane Campion. It may be considered an Australian film comedy, but it is certainly never going to be Doritos. Anything that's just too serious is not a Doritos film.
Yeah, there's certain directors who will just never enter into the Doritos territory. But others
Lars Von Trier.
Lars Von Trier has yet to make a Doritos movie. Maybe he should. Maybe that.
Well, maybe the house that Jack built. I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't brought myself to watch that yet.
And, well, when it's available for free.
Yeah.
Or AKA a streaming service I subscribe to so I don't have to repay for it.
Right.
Yeah. We're just making sure the audience, when they walk away from this episode, they're like, I don't know. Is this a Doritos movie, Lars von Trier? No.
No.
No. Stay away. If you're looking for comfort, you don't want to go to that aisle.
Yeah. And then there's movies like Starship Troopers, which are total cheese, but have somehow become their own special kind of classic. And people, you know, people love Starship Troopers. People still watch it. And
the question is, do they love it for the wrong reasons?
I think they love it because it's fun.
Is it though? And I mean that in that, like, when I watched it, I had a great time, but I, from the get-go, loved that he was making a commentary on fascism.
I think people do like that about it.
I just worry that was the thing, is that they made all these sequels, and I wonder if a lot of people didn't get what the movie was trying to say.
Well, clearly, I never saw any of the sequels, but I don't.
Neither did I.
I don't think the sequels got what it was trying to say. I think, you know, Paul Verhoeven does some interesting stuff, but yeah, it's a commentary.
Would you like to know more?
What?
Would you like to know more?
Yes.
That's what I love. He just, you know, that movie, I just saw that a few months ago, and some of it didn't hold up in that when I first watched it, I thought they were the most outstanding special effects I'd ever seen.
And right.
And now you see, and that's why I think it's fun to go back to a movie like this. You just see how much we've evolved in special effects in 20 years, because some of it is a little dated.
Well, particularly the 90s stuff where the CGI is not quite there yet.
No. And also just the way that computers are handled, or the way they thought they'd be handled versus what happened. That's always interesting about futuristic films, is that they don't know what they don't know.
Right. Which is quite a lot.
Yeah. So just even fonts and stuff, of the way computers were in the 90s versus, you know, how streamlined things became, which just makes you wonder, what will it be like in another 30 years?
Well, yeah. I mean, the Apple predicted 14 years in the future, so...
exactly.
Okay. Now here's, I'm going to throw this out there. This is the one I've been kind of, holding back. I don't really want to admit to.
I can handle it. I think I can handle it.
I mentioned this a few years ago when I was, on my last binge, because this is not a movie. This is a franchise.
Okay.
And it's terrible.
I'm bracing myself. You can't see it, but I'm bracing myself.
You need to brace yourself for this, because these are movies that have not gotten better with age.
Okay.
They've not turned into cult films. If anything, people regard them as lesser than...
than they were at the time?
Than they were at the time, which was really bad reviews at the time.
Okay.
Here's the franchise, and... this is like Doritos sprinkled with crack.
Okay.
Resident Evil.
Oh, you know who? You know what, though? See, this is where I wish my wife was here. Those are her Doritos movies. She'll be so happy. She loves those movies.
I do, too.
She forced me to watch one of them, and I didn't know what the hell was going on. I thought it was terrible.
Which one?
Who knows? I think they're all the same. It was not the last one, and it wasn't the first one. It was somewhere in between.
They're kind of indistinguishable, and some of them, like, they really are direct sequels. Like, the last scene of one is the first scene of the next one.
You know, remember when everything had to be 3D?
Yes.
They made a big deal of this particular one where they shot it with 3D cameras.
Yes.
And for a while, we had a 3D TV, though there was never any content available.
Right.
This particular movie was available 3D, and we watched it with the 3D glasses.
Uh-huh.
And it really, the 3D was pretty amazing. But it was ever that was the one that I saw.
Okay. I forget. I'm not an expert on these. I can't tell you which thing happened in which movie, but when I do watch them, I usually watch all six of them in a week.
So you've done this more than once?
Yes, I've done it like three times.
Well, I mean, I guess it's like playing a video game without the joystick.
Yeah, it is kind of, and it's totally mindless. And
I'll say that again.
Yeah, totally mindless, but there's some fun action sequences here and there. And they're just silly. They're just total junk as far as I'm concerned. They do not make me think at all.
Well, you're not going to get an argument from me on the junk aspect, for sure.
But your wife, she may think they're not total junk. Or she knows they're junk and she just loves them the way I do.
Well, I think this whole idea of the Doritos movie, this is exactly what she thinks of. It's not like that she thinks they're great. Like, for instance, Doritos Horror for her are the Final Destination movies.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, I would argue that the first one is a little bit better than Doritos.
Yeah, but it quickly goes into Doritosville after that.
Quickly after that.
But, you know, it's like, why would you keep going into a franchise when it's a lesser return each time, other than the fact that there's something about it that gives you comfort? And, you know, you can't, it's like, it's one of those things where it's critic proof. You just say, yeah, Hey, I like what I like, and that's just it.
And the critics don't matter. And I get it with Final Destination. It has those really cool death sequences, and you know you're going to get those in a Final Destination movie, and that's what you're there for.
Yeah. So to me, that, you know, by bringing her up a lot, because these are comforts that she finds in those kind of franchises. So,
and I would never recommend the Resident Evil movies to anyone.
Yeah. Typically with the Doritos film, you can say in a conversation that you've seen these movies, and that's how you introduce it to somebody. You don't say, oh, you got to see this. You just say, you know, like I would say to people, hey, I saw that really out there movie called The Apple. And then they might get intrigued, and I'll be like, you're on your own.
Exactly. You're on your own.
You didn't hear it from me.
Do not come back to me complaining about the Resident Evil movies.
Exactly right, because you said that the Resident Evil, why would you like that bag of crap? Yeah, I know.
Yeah, don't come complaining to me. It's on you.
I can't believe you like those movies, but I'm not going to make fun of you for liking them.
Well, because I'm not defending them either.
Exactly.
You know, it would be one thing if I said these are really good movies and they're cinematic masterpieces. Yeah, then you could pretty much rip me apart.
I'm waiting for that day where there's a movie that you say it's the best movie, and I'll be like, you gotta be kidding. But we haven't gotten there yet. I think we're gonna get there eventually.
So, okay, I guess this is also kind of an action movie, but another one that is a Doritos movie for me. And I come back. This is one that when it's on, for some reason, I keep watching. Count of Monte Cristo.
The DiCaprio?
No, the Jim Caviezel version.
There's a Jim Caviezel version?
Yes. Directed by Kevin Reynolds.
Oh. That's your version. I wouldn't watch a movie like that.
Guy Pearce and Jim Caviezel. Oh.
No. No. No.
Again, look, it's just Doritos. I'm not even recommending this movie to you.
I'm just going to remind the audience of a couple of movies. All right. No Country for Old Men,
mm-hmm.
and Singing in the Rain and To Kill a Mockingbird. Teal has seen none of those movies, but he has time to watch The Count of Monte Cristo with Jim Caviezel and Guy Pearce. There's something wrong there, and I don't know what it is, but I just say that maybe you need to make carve a tiny bit of time out.
Well, I haven't seen Count of Monte Cristo in many years, so.
Ironically, though, right? You keep not seeing Singing in the Rain. That's a movie that, like,
it is a Doritos movie.
It is Doritos movie for its age. It's so rewatchable. You should have seen that movie 10 times, not the non-time.
Yeah, I think that's going to be one that I'm going to have to watch with the family when I watch it.
You keep saying that, but like, is your family like on vacation? You could watch it with your family sooner than later. Maybe recommending that because it's really good and you have two daughters. We just did a whole program on it. And I really think they would enjoy that movie.
I think they would too. Yeah. So that's high on the list. But first, you know, I have some other I have some more Dwayne Johnson movies to get through.
Well, I mean, Hobbs and Shaw, which I'm now, you know, you didn't even know that this was on your agenda for a couple of weeks. I think it's May.
It's coming out. Okay, well, we'll probably have to dedicate a whole episode to that.
Yeah, I think because, you know, they have to time these things with IMAX. So I think there'll be a few weeks where the Avengers will be in the IMAX and then it will be Hobbs and Shaw.
Right.
Yeah. And you know what? And only because you put your head under a blanket and don't know what these movies are that are coming out. And you really don't.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you about a movie that you will not watch this trailer because you don't watch trailers.
Uh-huh.
But there's a film that we should all look out for. It is called The Dead Don't Die, I think it is.
Okay.
It is directed by Jim Jarmusch.
Oh, okay.
And Jarmusch has decided, after a whole indie career, that he would like some box office.
Interesting.
He has created, in the Jim Jarmusch droll comedy style, his own zombie movie. And it looks totally awesome.
Oh, that sounds great.
Bill Murray, Adam Driver, and Chloe Sevigny are the local police.
Okay.
And Tilda Swinton is a crazy Scottish woman.
Okay, this sounds pretty cool, except, you know, for Adam Driver.
I don't understand why you, first of all, you don't particularly like this actor, but yet you haven't seen a lot of his work, so I don't know.
No, that's true. He just bugs me for some reason.
I don't know why, but I think this is the thing. First of all, you've never even seen Girls.
Right, that's true.
He was really amazing on that. And then
I'm not saying he's a bad actor or anything. I think he's a decent actor. He just, to me, he's always Adam Driver.
Well, yeah, but okay, based on what? What have you seen him in besides playing Kylo Ren?
Isn't that all I need to see him in?
No. I want it now. You're going to say something like this. What have you actually seen him in? You've seen him in half of Black Klansman because you didn't finish that.
Lucky Logan.
Yeah, don't count that. I like Soderbergh, and yes, he experiments a lot, but that movie I couldn't even get through. So that's not a fair assessment.
Okay,
of Adam Driver.
I will withhold judgment then until I've seen some more work.
Like, you should see.
But aren't there actors that just kind of like bug you? You're just.
Well, I think we're going to be entering a new episode, so start thinking about that. Actors that bug. Yes, you know who bugs me is, and it's terrible because I didn't pre-plan this, but. The one who was married to Ben Affleck, Jennifer Garner.
Yes.
I hate her.
Yes.
Well, hate's a strong word. I don't know her. But I just, when she shows up in a movie, I show out. I get out of there.
Okay, yeah, that's a little bit how I feel about Adam Driver.
But I wouldn't not see something that I heard was good. Because
oh, neither would I. I wouldn't avoid something with him in it. I don't know. It just, he's no Dwayne Johnson.
Dwayne Johnson in movies is hard to not like. It's true.
Yeah, he's just a really charismatic guy.
Like, I can see where people would say, Jack Black, I don't know. You could either like Jack Black or not, but you can't say that about Dwayne Johnson. You either like him or you really like him.
Yeah. He comes across as having a good heart.
Yeah, I would say that. I don't know if it's true. But
I don't know if it's true. We'll that's how it. He comes across anyway.
All right. Well, I think we've Doritoed it up enough for one episode. We'll start working on that list of actors that bug Teal.
That bug me. Yeah, it's a long list. Roseanne Barr is on that list.
Well, she's on everyone's list, right? I never liked her, by the way.
No,
never.
That's what I'm talking. I'm going all the way back
I'm not jumping on any bandwagon here. I've always... From the stand-up days on, not a fan.
Yep,
never watched
too.
The show. Never, ever watched an episode of Roseanne in any form.
I did.
Never watched it.
Yeah, I think I've seen 3 or 4 episodes.
That's more than I have.
Yep.
Yep. We should do a quiz some days on shows that, you know, neither one of us have watched. Like, for instance, you've never seen an episode of The Family Guy.
That's true. Never seen an episode of Family Guy.
That is amazing because I, for years, and I'm talking like at least 10 years, almost every night I've gone to bed watching an episode of The Family Guy. It's been my nighttime show for 10 years.
So that's...
I've seen every episode at least 20 times.
So that's kind of a Doritos show for you.
It is just, you put it on and that way you get tired and sleepy because I know all the episodes. And so, yes. But I mean, it's amazing. You haven't even seen one episode. It's crazy.
Nope. Never seen one episode.
This is why we stick to movies, because basically when it comes to TV shows, Teal hasn't seen any. It goes back to a haunting childhood where he had no TV.
Had no TV, just movies.
Okay. Well, anyways, gang, I think we're going to wrap it up for now. And till the next time I talk to you, I talk to you. All right there, Teal, buddy?
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. Thank you for tuning in to Stuff We've Seen. If you like what you've been listening to, please make sure to tell a friend. Subscribe to us for free at iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Spotify, Google Play, or TuneIn. Subscribing ensures you always have the latest episode ready to play. Catch us and all our episodes on the web at stuffweveseen.com, or follow up us on Instagram at stuffweveseenpodcast, or on Twitter at stuff_VE. Stay safe and go see some stuff.